So let's start. So first of all, let me start with the usual locator map. So there are three classes of nodes that we will be talking about. So far we've only talked about the U class, okay? And each one has topology, combinatorics, low algebra, and high algebra. The topology is K, the set of all nodes in some sense. The combinatorics is A, so core diagrams modulo 4T, except, you know, later I'll generalize this and add to that, but this is the rough kind of the one-letter summary of what's inside it. We will seek later on invariant Z going from K to A, and I will explain why, and finding them is the task of high algebra. But even before that, I want to talk about low algebra. Low algebra is the fact that from A we have maps into spaces related to Lie algebras, and therefore whatever equations we will end up writing in A in order to find Z will have an interpretation in Lie algebras. Okay, so we are here. Today we're doing, well, not all of this box. There is more to this box than what we will do. But we will be doing a part of this box today, so a part of the low algebra box, okay? And the content of the low algebra box is the goal statement here. Well, I said a bit more of about it last time, but for now let me just sort of state a part of the goal, or restate a part of the goal, which is given a Lie algebra, finite dimensional metrized, and a finite dimensional representation thereof, we will construct a linear functional on A, on core diagrams. And therefore, assuming the fundamental theorem, which will come later, we will construct a not invariant. Okay? But first, it's a map from A into the rationals, or the ground field in general. Now, since it's about constructing things about Lie algebras, let me remind you what the data is. So, the data is, well, one piece of the data is, well, or the Lie algebraic piece of the data are a finite dimensional Lie algebra G. Lie algebra means that it has a bracket, a bilinear functional, or a linear functional going from G tensor G into G, meaning a bilinear operation on G, which is anti-symmetric and satisfies the Jacobi identity. I want the Lie algebra to have a metric, so a metric is just an inner product which is symmetric, so the inner product of XY is equal to the inner product of Y and X. Non-degenerate, which basically means that if you write the inner product as a matrix, it's an invertible matrix, and invariant. And the meaning of invariant is written here. Okay? And we said example, and this is the example that we will play with today. The Lie algebra is GLN, so just all n by n matrices with entries in the field. The bracket is just the commutator, and the inner product is, well, the inner product of A and B is the trace of their product, and we checked last time that it has all of these properties. Okay? Okay, and the last piece of data that we need is a representation. So a representation is a vector space R along with a map rho from the Lie algebra to the vector space, which is of course linear, and also maps the bracket in the Lie algebra to the bracket in the space of, not into R, but into the endomorphisms of R. So into the Lie bracket in endomorphisms of R, which is just the commutator. So in other words, it maps the bracket of X and Y to rho of X, rho of Y, minus rho of Y, rho of X. And, you know, there is a huge theory of representation theory of Lie algebras. It's sort of a huge discipline, a huge, there is a huge amount of stuff to say about these gadgets, and also lots of applications in physics and in other places, but that's not my task today. For me, that's the definitions, we'll work with those, okay? Now, I promised a linear functional on A, so let me quickly remind you what is A. So A is the space of core diagrams, and as of last time, we also allow internal oriented trivalent vertices. Modulo the anti-symmetry relation, which says that a vertex plus its opposite is equal to zero. The IHX relation, which says that if you have an I, it's equal to an H minus an X. And sort of these are not letters, but actual diagrams. Okay? And finally, the STU relation. So I'm saying finally, but in fact, the STU relation is the only real relation. I mean, it's the other two are implied by the STU by the STU relation. But the STU relation says that if you have a vertex on top, an internal vertex on top of the skeleton, so I'm not making the distinction between, you know, I should be making a graphical distinction using colored chalks or dashed lines or something between the skeleton and the internal lines. Okay, these are different lines. Okay, but I'm not making this distinction. The only way for you to tell them apart is by knowing from the context, or like often I will draw the skeleton either slightly rounded because it's a part of a circle, or at the bottom if we're talking about core diagrams are along a line, or with an arrow because it's an oriented, right? It's actually an oriented circle as opposed to the internal edges, which are not oriented. Okay, so I'll always give you a hint which part is the skeleton, but sort of there really is a distinction. Anyway, so the STU relation says that if you have a Y on top of the skeleton, it's equal to the difference of the two ways of getting rid of it. Okay. Anyway, and last time we've shown that this is isomorphic to the previously defined A, which was just core diagrams mod 40. Okay? So now, are you with me? Questions, comments, everything okay? Okay. So now, okay, what's going to happen now is that we're going to summarize the Lie algebraic information in terms of several tensors. So in terms of several multi-index symbols, okay? So, what is a tensor? Okay, it's a symbol with several indices, which whenever you, so that whenever you put values to the indices, you get a number. So it's a multi-dimensional matrix, okay? Rather than a two-by-two, a two-dimensional matrix, it's a certain higher dimensional matrix. But anyway, we will summarize all this information in terms of a few tensors. The tensors will have indices, and we will construct this by taking several such tensors and multiplying them and summing over the indices. And the diagram will be sort of the directions how to identify the indices with each other. Okay? So it's a bit of a combinatorial mess. okay, the part of mathematics that everybody hates the most, which is dealing with indices. But on the other hand, you know, once you systematize it, once it's become a whole machine of dealing with indices, it has its own internal beauty. So please bear with me, and I hope you'll find the beauty too. Now, at the end, you know, at some point throughout our calculations today, we will have a truly huge mess of indices, but at the end, everything will collapse to something very nice and simple. So it's really, there is a bit of an art to it and not just ugliness. So you have to somehow see through it. Anyway, let's summarize this information using tensors, okay? Everything can also be done abstractly without ever choosing a basis, and I may do it at some point, and it has some advantages, like certain things are more obvious. On the other hand, you can't calculate anything if you do it abstractly, so I'll actually start with the concrete way of doing it. Okay, so first of all, let's choose bases for the Lie algebra and for the representation space. So for the Lie algebra, the basis will be, let's say, G is equal to the linear span of vectors X sub A in it, where A runs from 1 to the dimension of the Lie algebra, which, as I said, is finite. Okay, and R will be the linear span, again, of some vectors, and I forgot what name I wanted for them. Let's just use E alpha, okay? Where alpha runs from 1 to the dimension of R. Okay, and let's write everything in terms of a basis. Okay? So, first of all, we can write the bracket using a basis. Since the basis is bilinear, it's enough to know what every since the bracket is bilinear, it's enough to know the brackets of basis elements. So let's define, the bracket of XA with XB will be a linear combination of X sub C's. And let's declare
the bracket.
The bracket, sorry, not the inner product. Yes, you're right. The bracket of XA and XB will be a linear combination of X sub C with some coefficients. The coefficients will depend on A and B, of course, but also on C, right? In fact, we have a summation over C over here. Okay? So let FABC be those coefficients. So they belong to the ground field, which is an arbitrary field of characteristic zero called Q. Okay? Now, by convention, we will drop summation formulas. So this is the Einstein summation convention. Whenever an index appears twice inside a formula, it means that we sum over it, and we don't bother to state the fact that we sum. Okay? So I'll drop the summation formula, but the meaning of this is a sum over C of that. Okay? So C's numbers, so again, this is like a three-dimensional matrix, so therefore it's a tensor, and it's called the structure constants of the Lie algebra, and you can recover the Lie algebra from those constants. Okay? As I already stated. Okay. Likewise, the metric is fully defined by the matrix of inner product of the basis elements with each other. So let's define the inner product of XA with XB to be T sub AB. And again, these are just the coefficients of the metric. Now, the fact that the metric is symmetric just means that TAB is equal to TBA. The fact that the metric is non-degenerate just means that this matrix is invertible. So let's declare that the inverse of the matrix T, so let's declare that the inverse of this matrix is called also T, but with upper indices. Okay? In other words, let's let T upper indices be the thing which, when multiplied with T lower indices, gives the identity. Okay? In other words, I want the identity TAB times TBC, right? The phrase written here is matrix multiplication. Matrix multiplication is just you take the right index of one matrix, the left index of the other matrix, and sum over all possibilities. And I've summed here because of the Einstein summation convention, because I use the same letter twice. Okay? So TAB, TBC should be the identity matrix, meaning it should be delta AC. Are you with me? Are you okay? Now, I should write what invariance is, but there is a better way to write invariance and anti-symmetry at the, sorry, the invariance of the bracket of the metric and the anti-symmetry of the bracket at the same time. And this is as follows. Okay? So, rather than recording, okay, rather than remembering the coefficients FABC, you can instead take the inner product of this vector with any other basis element. Okay? So take the inner product of this with XC. Okay? So on one hand, this is information that we already have. I mean, this can be written as FABD times XD, and the bracket of XD with XC is TD C, and the summation is, well, sort of I'm suppressing the summation. So this on one hand is that, but on the other hand, let's rename this quantity F lowercase ABC. Okay? And then F lowercase ABC satisfies that FABC is equal to negative FBAC. So it's anti-symmetric in the first two indices. And this is the fact that the bracket, well, this is just the fact that the bracket is anti-symmetric. Okay? And you can check that this identity becomes the fact that F is symmetric under a cyclic permutation of the indices. So this is also equal to F of BCA. Okay? So in other words, F is
totally anti symmetric. If you permute the indices, you you just multiply by the sign of the permutation. By the way, is this an okay font? So it's a small room, so I'm using a small font. But is this readable for Nadish, who's sitting the farthest? Okay, good. Okay. Likewise, I can, so far I've summarized the Lie algebra and the metric with some tensors. Likewise, I can do for the representation, and it's even easier. So, for the representation, I just have to record what is the representation acting on a basis element. So, how to represent a basis element as an endomorphism of R. So I have to know how this acts on E alpha. This will be a linear combination of E betas. And I just need to fix what the coefficients are. So let's call the coefficients lowercase r of, so let's see, these coefficients depend on A, alpha, and beta. So, sorry, so A, alpha, beta, and the summation over beta is implicit. Okay, so again, I get a tensor that depends on three indices, except these three indices, so the three indices here were the same, they were all running from one to the dimension of the Lie algebra, but here one index is a Lie algebra index, and the other two indices are representation indices, so they run up to the dimension of the representation. Okay? Now, this isn't yet all. There are also two identities. So, one identity is the Jacobi identity, written in terms which can be rewritten in terms of the f's. So one identity is the Jacobi, and rather than writing it in full, which is a huge pain, I'll just tell you, well, it's not a huge pain, in fact it's a minor pain, but rather than suffering through this minor pain, I will tell you how it is, how it can be written. So all you have to do is you have to take the bracket of xA with xB, right? This will be given by some structure constants. Take the bracket of this with xC, again, this is more structure constants, okay? And then take the inner product of this with xD, okay? And now do a cyclic summation over ABC. Okay? And, well, any such expression can be written using the brackets and the, the structure constants and the metric constants. In fact, and then you do cyclic permutations. In fact, why don't I just write it rather than philosophizing? So, this will be FABD times XD. And then I need to take the bracket of XD with XC. So this will be FDC times FDCE times XE. And then I need to write the inner product of XE with XD. So this will be TED.
But it's not
is the
D.
D is the same D?
What?
Is the
you
first
D used
then?
Oh, yeah, no, wrong. So I shouldn't have used D here. I should have, I was clever enough to skip one letter, but not clever enough to skip two. So sorry, this should have been E, this should have been F, don't be annoying, and this is FD. And here there is an F, okay? And this F has nothing to do with this F, okay? But again, they live in different places, so it doesn't matter, right? I mean, That's just a symbol for the structure constant, and that's an index. Okay, I think now it's right. No, this is E. Okay. And then you take, again, cyclic summation over A, B, and C. And this sum is equal to zero. So this is a summation over cyclic permutations, not over the indices. The summation over the indices is automatic. I don't need to write it. Okay? And likewise, there is a certain identity that combines if and R. Okay? So that somehow mixes the representation acting on the bracket with two copies of the with the representation twice. Okay? So I will only write it schematically without writing in detail what it is. So somehow R times F, okay? So this is representing a bracket, and now I'm dropping all the indices. So this will be some identity of the form. R times F is equal to representing one thing times representing the other, minus representing the other times representing the first. But again, this is sort of only schematically written. Yes?
Why did you have to take the inner product with the force vector? Why did you have to contract with this?
Oh, I guess I didn't. This is the form in which it will be easier to it will be easier to translate it to the diagrammatic picture that I will soon have. It's not really important. You're right. I could have dropped the last thing, and just like equally well, I could have multiplied by the inverse of the last thing. The last thing is invertible. So, okay. Anyway, so now I can define this map. So rather than defining it in full, I will define it on a single example, and then it will be obvious how to define it in full. Okay, I'll just take a sufficiently complicated example. So I suppose my sufficiently complicated example will be, I don't know what, this core diagram. Okay? So the first thing that I do is I label every half internal edge with a lowercase English letter. Okay? So, you know what? Let's take something simpler. I don't want to run out of English letters. So, in fact, why don't we take just the diagram written here? So, I'll label every half internal edge with a lowercase English letter. So, let's say this will be A, this will be B, this will be C, this will be D, this will be E, okay? And I need three more letters for the other halves of these internal edges, but let me just use A prime, B prime, and C prime, okay? Then I label every arc of the skeleton with a Greek letter. So let's go alpha, beta, gamma, delta, and epsilon. Okay? And now I convert this into an algebraic expression using the following rules. Whenever I see an internal vertex labeled A, B, like here, A, B, C, I map it to lower F sub those letters A, B, and C. Taken, so remember that my internal vertices are supposed to be oriented, so taken with the ordering that is given. So the way it is drawn, it's just the planar ordering, counterclockwise. So A, B, so F sub A, B, C. Wherever I see an internal edge labeled A prime, I map it to T, the inverse metric, with indices A and A prime. And wherever I see a skeleton vertex labeled A alpha beta, I map it to R A alpha beta. Okay? So let's do it to this specific diagram. Okay? So when you do it to this specific diagram, you get, first of all, from this vertex, F, A, B, C. Then you get T, E, D, T, B, A, A prime, T, B, B prime, T, C, C prime, and we're done with those, and now let's do these. So we get times R, and now D epsilon alpha, D epsilon alpha, R, B prime alpha beta, B prime alpha beta, R, C prime beta gamma, C prime beta gamma, R, E gamma delta, E gamma delta, and finally R A prime delta epsilon, A prime delta epsilon. Okay? Now, if you look at the expression written here, every index appears twice. Once as a lower index, once as an upper index. Therefore, everything automatically gets summed over. So this is a number. Okay? So, claim. Okay, let's call this number let's call this number WGR of the diagram D. Okay? So claim, first of all, WG of R is WGR of D is independent of all choices. So, which choices did we make? First of all, we chose which English letters to use and which Greek letters to use. Okay? But that's clearly independent because these are just dummy variables, summation variables. Okay? Second, wherever we saw an edge, we had to choose whether, so whenever we saw an internal edge, we had to choose whether to write TED or TDE. Okay, we had to choose whether to write TAA prime or TA prime A. But that's the same because T was symmetric and therefore its inverse is also symmetric. Wherever we saw an internal vertex, well, we had to choose where to start. So is it FABC or FBCA? Because the orientation of the vertex is only a cyclic ordering. It's not a complete ordering. But that's this identity. It's the fact that this is equal to that. Okay? That's the easy things. Okay? Then comes the harder thing. okay? Which is, I also claim that it's independent of the choice of the bases that we choose. Okay? So there are two ways to do it, to show that everything is independent of the choice of bases. One way is to go more abstract, and we'll do it later. And if you go more abstract, it's completely automatic. I mean, you can just write it in a basis-free way, but then you cannot compute anything. Alternatively, you can explicitly see what changing the basis will do. So suppose you change from a basis XA to a basis X prime B. Then there will be some matrix MAB for the change of basis. And you can check that, you can see how all of these things change under the change of basis. And you'll find that the lower indices somehow change by multiplying by the matrix M, and the upper indices change by multiplying by the inverse of M. And when you write an expression like this, in which the lower and upper indices are balanced, all the inverse matrix pairs cancel. This is sort of, if this was hell, then this is sort of hell squared to do. But it's doable. And besides, we'll have something more abstract to do it, a more abstract way to do it later. And so I'll skip it. And two, which is more fun and more interesting, is that WGR satisfies anti-symmetry, IHX, and STU, and hence it descends to a map WG sub R going from A into Q. So far it was defined just on raw diagrams, but I'm claiming that it descends to the quotient. But you see, there is nothing to, I mean, this is when you look at it, this is that everything was cooked so that this will happen. Okay? So anti-symmetry, well, the vertex represents the bracket. So the anti-symmetry of the vertex becomes the bracket. Sorry, the vertex is represented by the bracket. This is more precise. The IHX identity is an identity which involves contracting two vertices in three different ways. Connecting two vertices in three different ways. A vertex is a bracket, right? A vertex is an F, and an F is a bracket. So this is three different ways of contracting the bracket twice. And when you write them down explicitly, it becomes this. Hence, well, since the twice the bracket, well, basically it becomes the Jacobi identity. So this is anti-symmetry, this is just the Jacobi. And the STO is, again, a relation involving one bracket and one representation. So one bracket and one representation is equal to two representations in two different ways. So the right-hand side. So this is just the fact that representations are actually representations. So the definition of a representation, or the fact that representations represent. Well, I'll just keep it as the definition of a representation. So, you know, you can write everything explicitly and in full detail, but it's somehow pointless. It's nicer to just keep the visualization right. Okay? And the disadvantage of keeping the visualization right is that you're never sure that you got the signs right. I think the signs are right. Anyway, this said, let's do an example. I don't know if it will fit in 10 minutes. I hope it will. Okay? So, are you with me? Are you okay? You okay? Are you okay? Okay. So let's do one example, or not one example, this example in full. So, okay. So we're going to go from hell to hell squared, but then it will turn out that everything collapses to something really, really simple. So first of all, let's go from hell to hell squared. Well, what is the basis of GLN? Well, GLN is n by n matrices, so the basis is matrices like this, right? With row I, column j, 1, and everything else equal to 0. Okay? So this should be x sub a. Okay? Or that's a reasonable choice for a basis. But this means that a is really a biindex. It's a double index. Okay? I mean, so the algebra is n squared dimensional, so you know you could write it as a running from 1 to n squared, but it's more efficient to just replace a by a pair of indices I and j that go from 1 to n. Okay? So now all the tensors are have double the number of indices which run to square root the dimension. Okay? So, but let's compute what these indices are, because what these tensors are, because it's actually rather easy. So for example, let's start with what's the product of the matrix Xij with the matrix Xkl? So, you know, if you multiply if you multiply a matrix whose only one is in column J with a matrix whose only one is in row K, the only way you can get something is if J is equal to K, and then you get 1. Okay? So you'll get delta JK times, well, let me just write the answer and then explain it in a better language. Okay. This is the matrix which takes EJ, the basis element number J, to EI. Okay, and everything else goes to 0. So this matrix takes EL to EK, and then this matrix takes EJ to EI. The only way you'll get something non-zero is if K is equal to J, if the output of this is the input of that. So only if delta of J is equal to K. And then in which case you will get the matrix which takes the linear operator that takes EL to EI, meaning XIL. Okay, sorry, this is the better way of saying it. Likewise, okay, now that we know this, we can compute the inner product. So the inner product of Xij with Xkl is the trace of this matrix. It's the trace of the product. The product is this. The trace of this is delta jk delta. Well, the only way a matrix like that will have a trace is if I is equal to L. So delta IL. Okay? So this is what you would call T of AB. So T of IJ, T of the biindex IK with the biindex KL. Okay? Now, this is an n squared by n squared matrix, and we need to invert it to get the upper T, which we really need. Okay? So, but on the other hand, it's a permutation matrix. So inverting it is just finding the inverse permutation. Let me just tell you what the inverse is. The inverse is the same. Okay, it's so the inverse is T I J T K L, sorry, T I J comma K L is equal to the same thing. So delta J K delta I L. And if you don't believe me, let's multiply the two. Should I do it or not? What? We hardly have time, but it's actually really, really easy. I mean, you just sort of, once you write it down, it's immediate, okay? Anyway, now let's figure out the structure constants. So what is F, so the thing that replaces FABC? Well, this is the bracket, sorry, the inner product of, where did I write it? Here. So the inner product of xij bracket xkl with xmn, right? And let's see. Well, this is just delta, so it's the product of the two, so it's delta jk xil minus, now let's multiply them the other way around, so minus delta, these are the other, delta il xkj. Okay? And this remains xmn, and the metric we already found. So the first term will give me delta jk, I just copy, delta jk, and then delta, let's see, l with m, delta lm, delta in, minus delta il, delta kn, delta jm. Okay? And finally, well, I didn't yet tell you which representation to take. Then take the standard representation. So, the representation is just Q to the power N, okay, with basis E alpha, which is just, but you see, alpha runs from 1 to n. So you know what, let's just keep it this way. So we represent basis E alpha, which is just, you know, 1 at the alpha place. And so what is R A alpha beta? It's R of, well, A is really a pair ij, alpha beta. And this is when you take the matrix XA, you take this matrix, you apply it to E alpha. The only way you would get something is if alpha is equal to J. So this is delta J alpha, and then you'll get EI as the output, meaning that the coefficient of a general E beta will be delta I beta. I hope I have it right. Okay. Do I have time to finish it? Okay. You know, let's just do one diagram, and the trick is to label everything right. Okay, so what I'll do is let's start with the pieces. Okay, so the trick is well, you know, we should have a labeling A, B here, but really A and B are pairs, I, J, and K, L. So let's label, let's declare that the I is always on the left when you view the half edge from the center. So I'll put I here, J here. And likewise, when I go left, this will be K, this will be L. Okay? So this will be delta, what was T? Delta JK, delta IL. So delta JK, delta IL. But a different way of writing it is to say, here is a different way of writing it. We connect I with J and, J with K, J with K, and I with L. Okay? Now, if you do the same for the vertex, I'll finish it next time, but let me just draw the vertex. So the vertex is labeled I, J, K, L, M, N, and it becomes delta JK, delta LM, delta IN. So I connect the J to the K, I connect the L to the M, and I connect the N to the I. Right, this is the first expression, minus everything twisted. So I'll just do it this way. It's the same thing, but everything gets twisted. Okay, and what I'll do next time, and I'm really sorry it stopped just when the ugliness goes away, the hour ends, but what I'll do next time is I'll show how to do it to a complete diagram. I still have to do the representation, but it's the same, similar. So I'll do it to a complete diagram, and it turns out that all I need to do is to keep track of what connects to what. And then, since and then the and all the summations become simple countings, and I'll get a completely combinatorial, straightforward way of evaluating diagrams. Okay, so I'll stop here.